Well, here we are.
This is it. Hello. How are you?
Well, hi, Charles.
Nice to see you, Sally.
It's good to see you. Dale's here, and this is a friend of ours, Mel Lucchetti.
Hi.
And this is Dick Ruttlinger.
Hi, glad to know you.
This is Bill Schechner from KPFA. He's going to do the program with us.
Oh, well, great. Well, listen, we've got a roll on. Why don't you come on in and listen to it?
This is a Chickering 5'2" grand built in 1935.
I think we should explain how the thing works, because I wouldn't be surprised if there are a lot of people listening who, given the fact that this machine was in its heyday 50 years ago, maybe a lot of people have never seen one. And really, I was surprised to see a baby grand player piano. I always think of them as uprights. And somebody should describe how it works, what makes the thing play.
Well, it's basically like a player piano. It has uses a musical roll with holes punched in it, and so in that respect it's very similar to a upright player piano. The main difference is that these are actually recordings that were done in a recording studio with live pianists, and when they recorded not only the notes that were played, but also the dynamics and the phrasing, the tempo changes.
Go back a step.
Where?
Yeah, do the mechanical part of transferring a piece of paper with a lot of holes into
A pianist would come into a recording studio and sit down at a recording piano, and the Ampico used a system where, as he played, small pencil lines were drawn on a piece of paper. Then later these were punched as the actual perforations, which was corresponded to the notes he played.
I always thought that it was punched at the same time.
No. That was found to be very inaccurate, and so they used pencil marks. And then these were hand-punched to make a master roll. But then in addition to this, they also added in, through a very complicated system of measuring hammer velocity and a few other things, the intensity of each note. And then there's a mechanism added to the Ampico or Duart system, which is able to reproduce exactly the intensity that he played in the studio originally. So when you take the completed recording that they produced at the factory and you put it on your piano, you get an exact reproduction of what he did originally at the recording studio.
And it's air operated, isn't it?
It's all operated by vacuum.
Yeah, the roll goes across a series of openings like a harmonica, and when air comes through it, the piano knows what to do.
It triggers a valve, and the valve causes a little bellow or pneumatic to collapse, and that causes the key to strike. And the extra marginal perforations along the side control a series of pressure regulators, which control the intensity of each note.
These are really curiosities now, but back in the 20s, how common were they? Would it be as common, say, as color television is today? Lots of people had them?
Not for the Ampico or the Duart. For the ordinary player, it would be common almost as a hi-fi. Yeah, hi-fi or television, sure, everyone had
that many.
In proportion, anyway.
In proportion, yeah. Those who could afford any kind of a home entertainment thing would probably have a player piano.
Yeah, I think in the peak year there were 450,000 of them manufactured in this country alone.
Right. What year was that?
Oh, it was about 1923 or 4, I think.
Yeah,
wasn't
started
it?
To drop right off slightly. Of, yeah.
What was a big hit? Do you have in the pile on the piano there a big hit from that period, and we can see what people were racing down to the corner to get?
I think so.
Well, Song of India was one.
Oh, it's one of my favorites.
This is a three-handed arrangement by. They appeared what in the Ziegfeld thing, wasn't it?
They did Ziegfeld Follies, and they also made some, concert appearances. So
but they were basically Ampico artists that appeared as three pianists on the Ziegfeld thing. They became so popular with the Ziegfeld that they began to produce these roles for home use on the Ampico piano. So what you're hearing.
Six hands.
So it's six hands, right?
One pianist, one piano. Yeah.
Right.
Well, let's see what. How do you put this role in now? Just like a.
This has a drawer, of course, which goes underneath the keys, and it contains the mechanism for moving the roll back and forth. Mm-hmm. And it simply plugs into a little socket on one end, and then it hooks onto a drive on the other. Then you bring it across the tracker bar, which has all the holes in it corresponding to the keys. You get it started on the take-up spool.
What does it say on this label here?
Occasionally it has some descriptives of one kind.
It says Ampico recording for use only on the Ampico, but you can use this on other instruments.
The reason for the restriction, the Ampico is the trade name of the player system itself. And the reason for saying only on the Ampico is that none of the reproducing systems were compatible with one another. They were all out to achieve the same ends, but the actual pneumatic system which did this differed from one piano to another, so that this role will only work on a piano which has the Ampico system in it.
But you have speed controls here too. Does that mean you can make this thing go really fast or really slow?
Yes. Without changing the pitch, obviously, we can slow it way down, or we can speed it way up.
Oh, that's fascinating.
So that if you wish to study the fingering, say, in detail, you can slow it down as much as you want to.
I guess what's interesting about that is when we slow down a tape, the pitches all get lower.
Yeah, there
when
is.
When we speed up a tape, they get faster, but here you can speed up or slow down without changing pitch.
Yeah, there is a simple little electronic device which will allow you to slow down your tape and maintain the pitch, but as far as I know, it's not in general use. In addition, we have controls here so that we can repeat the roll if desired. It automatically rewinds itself when it gets to the end.
And play over and over again.
Yes. And in case the volume level is a little too high to tolerate, we have a lower level that is adjustable here with a little switch. All in all, it's a rather simple mechanism. The speed at which the roll plays is printed on each one. It's not a hard and fast thing. You can run a little slower, faster, if you desire. We generally stay somewhere near.
Why don't you wind it up?
Okay, no, here we go. Thank you.
was really super.
Gosh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
David, yeah. Perhaps, but...
Do you have any more things with multiple pianos?
Yeah, quite a few.
I mean, multiple pianists.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yeah, they were very fond of four-handed arrangements, sort of orchestral things. Well, they actually did a lot of overtures to operas and that sort of thing with a conductor yet, you know.
Badansky conducted a lot of those things.
Oh, yes, yeah. They were very big in their day. That was one of the few ways that you could hear that sort of thing in the home at the time. And people wanted a large variety of material to use on the piano, so they were willing to
maybe later,
cater
later
the
in
desires.
The program we could hear some more of the ensemble work. I'd like
oh
to.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you have next for us?
Wait a minute, I want to ask a question.
Good.
I saw you, Dale, pouring over the thing as it was going by. Are you good enough to be able to take out a roll and open it up sort of like it's the Torah and see what it's going to be? Or do you have to put it on? Can you tell from the little holes?
To a reasonable extent, yes.
But he comes all the time like that.
It's sort of like a nonstop punch card for a computer. It's a little bit wider, but that's the kind of holes that are on it.
Yeah, it's almost a foot wide and it has 100 holes in it.
And you could hold something up and say, ah.
Oh, yeah.
The Triumphal March from Aida for six hands.
yeah, if you can read it that well.
Oh, yes, we all can do that, sure. You know.
Actually, it's easier to read the dynamics on the side because there are only 7 holes on each side controlling those. I am not too good at reading my music by means of the holes.
But can... No, that's a serious question.
Can
you?
Done,
yes, you can.
Yeah.
You could actually lay it out on a piece of graph paper and actually write a score.
No, I know that it would be possible.
Oh,
but I mean, can you see it?
You know.
Have you been looking at enough of these to be able to do it?
Oh, yeah. Not all of them, but the ones I've at least heard once or twice, I can sort of...
Mm-hmm. You recognize them by their...
Can
pattern.
You do that, Dick?
No.
Don't feel bad either, can I?
At what point would the piano roll fall apart if there were too many holes? You say there were 100 possibilities horizontally. What if all of the notes were struck at once? Would the roll just rip?
Oh, no, it won't hurt the roll in any way. It's just that the suction pump wouldn't be able to maintain that many at once.
Ah, I see.
As I was saying a moment ago, I think the most number of holes, note holes, that is, striking notes, that I've seen in use on one of these rolls is 22.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that you mention that, I remember when we were here mm-hmm. doing the Ballet Mécanique rolls that there was a note in the score that said no more than 23 notes could be struck at once. Because of some reason, and it must be that.
Well, that would be the only limitation is the lack of power to keep it going, you know, because
okay.
every one that's open tends to decrease the suction available from the pumps, and you finally reach a point where it just can't handle them anymore. But this is an abnormal situation, of course. If we ever get around to it, we might play the latter part of the orchestral version of the American in Paris, which is enough to shatter any piano.
Have you got it?
Yes.
Oh, good.
I got rid of mine.
Why don't we do it now? Is there any reason we couldn't do it now?
Can we have it now?
Yeah.
Can you dig it out?
Uh-huh. It's right out there.
It's about to be dug
let's
out.
Let's go back over here and look at this.
Okay.
There's a whole collection of rolls back here. How's it sound, George?
It's fine.
Good.
Kind of piano.
Sally, why don't you describe what you're looking at?
Well, I'm looking at a collection of rolls trying to find, I imagine there's
running from the wall
400 in this wall and trying to find one out of it. And
you don't have them cataloged?
Oh, yes, we have them cataloged. We're going to do the second part of American in Paris?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, there
That's
you go.
The quiet one.
The quiet one.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
See, it was nestling right up against the Egyptian ballet.
Yes. Well, these are, there are different types of Ampico rolls. Like, there are 3 really separate systems. There's really more than that, but Ampico came, when it originally came out, they weren't so sophisticated, and then they got a little more sophisticated, and the rolls got more sophisticated. And the group that we're looking at was as sophisticated as they got. This was called the B version of the Ampico, and they changed the whole mechanism for this particular.
You mean sophisticated in terms of ability to reproduce
That's
what somebody
right.
played in a studio?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, faster reproduction and almost instantaneous response, and a few other things that made it.
Was this, since it was in direct competition with records at this time, because recordings were just beginning to become a big thing in the period right around the First World War.
Well, no, these rolls that you're looking at here are from the 30s.
Really?
28, 29 through 1940. 1940 was the last one that was made until just recently, which we have a fella did Raindrops Are Falling. But, I mean, no, these go up. This is a misnomer. These rolls in here, Ampicos, were made up to 1940. But I don't know. I've never seen a 1940 piano. Have
no,
you?
No. I think the last piano I saw was the 38.
So then people would buy these in order to have true sound in their home and a true performance. That was the selling point.
Yeah,
well then radio came in and phonographs came in and the Depression hit and that was that.
That was the end of that.
And wait a minute, what's this listing of recordings that are available October 72? Are these being reissued now?
Well, this... We'll let Dick talk about this one.
These are 88-note rolls that are being put out by the Master Touch Company in Australia. At present, they don't have a U.S. distributorship, and they're trying to negotiate a new deal in this country. However, the QRS company here in the States has never ceased manufacture of just straight piano rolls, but this is not reproducing rolls. They are not the Ampico or the Duoart, but just...
Their own new ones.
Right. They hit. They cut everything from new hit parade tunes, rock music, anything you want.
Still being made. No idea.
Yeah, they issue, I would imagine, maybe a dozen a month of new recordings.
How many did they sell? One wonders.
Well, apparently their sales have gone up tremendously in the last 10 years. There's been such a rebirth in the interest in the player piano. That
there's new instruments being manufactured, not the reproducing piano, but the straight player is being made again.
Dale, have you got a spectacular ready?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, what is this again? This is a tour de force, right?
Yes. This is an orchestrated version of The American Paris by George Gershwin. And this was done very late in the game, long after it was economically feasible to use the direct recording system by a pianist. So this was mechanically arranged by a very skillful arranger. He had worked with these machines for 20 years or more before he did this role. So he understood the machinery completely, and I feel he also understands the music. And so this is not really a pianist playing, but it is utilizing the piano to
Well, it's
execute.
Like one step, it's a pianist can sit down and use the keys mechanically, which operates the hammers, and he just went one step removed. He used the player, which in turn operates the keys, which in turn operates the hammer, and he knew what to do to get the same thing that a pianist would.
So this is taking it just about as far as you can go.
Yeah.
This is just removing it back.
So we'll get this one started.
Thank you.
You're exhaling after that.
Oh, yes. Well, it's rather dramatic. It's a little different than Oscar Levant did it.
Well, Oscar Levant didn't have enough hands to do that, and he couldn't reach as far.
How true. As I say, it's not to be considered as a legitimate recording, but it's just an orchestral arrangement for piano. There were a number of composers who were interested in this aspect. Mr. Antheil, I believe, yeah, and Igor Stravinsky, several composers of that note were very much interested in the possibility of doing piano work separate from the pianist. Not too much came of it, but...
I noticed, Charles, maybe you noticed too, it seemed to me that it had sort of a lockstep aspect since it was produced for a mechanical device as opposed to the others that were transcribed. Did you hear that?
It was tight. It was kind of 1-2-1-2.
Yeah,
but you know what was interesting to me was that there were times, if we imagine two pianists sitting down and playing that piece, there are times when the glissandi move up through, you get a big thing that happens from the bottom of the piano all the way to the top, which two pianists could never coordinate. And that's the beauty of something like this. You have very tight control, and very exciting things can be ensembled out by the arranger.
Mel and I were talking about this role because this is, to our way of thinking, a bad example of a piano role. From the standpoint that it isn't piano music, it's, you know, made for an orchestra, and
nothing wrong with that. I mean, unless there should be no puritanism about this instrument. You should do what you can with it and use it for what it is, not for what it should be. Simply reproducing it can go way beyond that. That's what I like about the instrument. It has a lot of compositional capabilities, and I don't think we should make judgments about, well, it should just reproduce what a human can do, because it's much better than humans in a lot of ways, and it has limitations that humans don't have in other ways. So,
well,
they're
sold
good
my
bad.
Copy.
What?
I sold my copy.
For how much?
Well, I don't want to divulge how much, but no, I.
Well, what are these worth? That's an interesting question. Are they an expensive piece of Americana?
They are an expensive piece of Americana. Now, they never used to be, but when we all got started, we used to pick them up for 30 cents.
When did you guys start recording? Collecting, excuse me.
I started in about 56. And I was
and even
paying,
then it wasn't.
Well, 56, I thought the quarter's an awful lot. If I could get it for 15 cents, it'd be much better.
We all started collecting about 56. It was right
as
around
far as
there.
Reproducing
yeah.
Roles.
Yeah.
That's how we got to know each other, was through the underground.
Is there an organization that sort of gathers people like this together?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Collectors group,
yeah.
What do you do if you're a collector? How do you get in touch with other collectors?
Well, the
group of us founded AMICA, which is the Automatic Musical Instrument Collectors Association, about in 63.
AMICA.
And we've been growing slowly at first, but now rather rapidly. I don't know what our membership is.
Between 550 and 600 members.
You're
universe.
Kidding. That many people?
It's
yeah.
international now.
It's international now. We have people in other countries.
We've had two international conventions. The first one 2 years ago here in San Francisco in the founding chapter. And then just this last summer in L.A. we had a four-day convention and got to go to different collections down there. They have some fantastic collections of all types of mechanical instruments. And we had about, I think, 250 members, roughly 250 members at this last convention from all over the world.
It's quite remarkable.
If I wanted to... buy a piano roll, where would I go to do so? Are there stores that stock them? I don't mean new ones. I mean, are there dealers who specialize in this? And what would it cost? What does one of these cost? I don't mean one of the super duper ones, but say a sort of an Oldsmobile of piano rolls.
Oldsmobile of piano rolls. I don't know. They're running anywhere from now $3.50-$4 on up to $30 and $40.
Is there a
$50 and $60?
I presume the historical nature of it is important. For instance, it's worth more if it dates from the period as opposed to one that was made last week, a copy of something from 1912, right? Do people do that?
Yes, there are some people that are copying them, and even those aren't cheap because a new copy is about $6.
How do you copy one of those things?
With great difficulty. it's a long process. It takes a lot of editing because they're not working from the original masters. They're working from something that there are lots of corrections that have to be made to get a true copy, and even that sometimes they goof.
Well, what do you mean? What would be difficult about copying the roll we just heard?
Well, if the original masters were made on a ratio of, they were paper rolls, but the ratio was a length of 3:1. And where we have a slot in this roll, this would be a series of dots that were spread out. And when you reduce this down three times, why, that produces a slot. So that you could actually edit a roll or correct a roll or get an exact copy because you're working with individual dots. Now, when you try to have a punching machine to pick up a slot, you have the problems with the machine not beginning at the very beginning, so you have a delay, or punching a little too late, so you have an elongation of the roll, or missing, say, many of the rolls have just a single punch coming in, and the machine will miss that completely. And then the length of the original roll, of course, was always controlled by the master. Well, when you take a roll here and you try to copy it again, you get length problems, stretching and compressing, and it's a very, very difficult process to, without using the original system.
Why do you suppose they're coming back? Not coming back, but are becoming somewhat voguish?
I don't know. I've liked them since six, and I can't tell you what happened at 6 years old.
Did your family have one?
No, we never had one. We never even had a straight player. But when I was about 6 years old, living in Stockton, my greatest thrill was to be able to go over to George and Eva Renner's, who had a Gulbranson pumper upright, and I would spend all afternoon pumping away on QRS rolls. And I fell in love with them then, and then about 7 or 8 years later found that there was another brand of player piano called the Ampico that was actually able to reproduce music as played. And from then on, why, I've been, to be able to hear someone like Rachmaninoff or Gadowski or Levine or anybody else, or Dagnani or Copland, or you know, any of the great pianists, all of them recorded for the systems, to hear them play as they originally played on a real piano is something that you can't get off records, because no matter how good your hi-fi system is, it's not an original source, and this is.
Maybe we should listen to something that's a good example of that. Why don't you get me out of this situation and suggest something.
Well, why don't you ask him what's in that box?
What's in that box?
Well, this is Erno Dagnani, who recorded this in about 1921, and this is his Music of the Spheres.
That's the name of the piece.
Yeah.
Number 5 of the suite, Winterreigen, Opus 13. Oh, it's a piano piece from a longer collection, which he plays. It says copyright 1921. Does that mean that's about when he recorded?
That's about when he played it. And if I look at the box, no, this, most of the boxes, most of the Ampico boxes are dated in the lower corner, but this one wasn't. So, but you can assume if they copyright in 21 that the recording was around 1921.
I'm going to admit my ignorance and say that his name is not familiar to me. Tell me a little bit about him.
Well, he's a Hungarian composer who wrote his most famous piece is the Variations on a Nursery Theme for orchestra. It's a children's theme which he made into a longer orchestral suite. He was a man who was a piano virtuoso and wrote a lot of compositions that were very, very florid. This hopefully will be one of those. Thank you.
Now that's what you call more like it. Now that's a real player piano thing. We're now up on the second floor, and the sun has come out, and that's what I always think of when I think of player pianos. What's happened here? Describe the differences.
Well, it's essentially the same machinery. Again, it's a pneumatically operated system, but in this case, the motive power is provided by a strong pair of ankles.
Preferably taped.
Melvin makes that remark because this piano was built in 1918. I acquired it about 7 years ago. Incidentally, it's a 6-foot Weber Grand.
When you pump it down there, is that powering something which makes these little bellows move, which provides the air? Is that what's happening?
Yes, you're providing the suction, which this machine operates on, and the volume is a function of how firmly you depress the pedals and how frequently. I was going to say, this piano was built in 1918, and it has never been reconstructed. It's still running. It's not in the best of condition, either as a piano or as a player, but it does still function, which has something to say about its longevity.
These are not, it's not the same company. We've changed companies, haven't we?
Yes, this was one of the competitors of the American Piano Company. This was the Aeolian Company. Between the two of them, they pretty well had the expensive player piano market cornered. This company also made the reproducing system known as the Duo Art, which was found in the Steinway and all the pianos of Aeolian Company itself.
Are these more rinky-tank barroom kind of selections? Was there a catalog full of that, or is it just that you happen to have those here and picked one out?
There were numerous manufacturers. If you look at the shelf over there, you'll see all sorts of label ends. In the United States, there were probably, I don't know, maybe close to 100 different labels at one time or another. Some of them were only distributor labels, but there were literally dozens of companies making these straight player piano rolls over the years. They were also made in Europe by a number of manufacturers, France, Germany, England, Australia, almost everywhere.
But this is all up, the collection up here is all pop, isn't it?
Almost entirely, yes. There was a period of issuing classical music on 88-note rolls. However, it was usually a straight transcription of the sheet music itself.
Did I say something awful?
Well, he left out the Poet and Peasant Overture, which is my big tour de force.
True.
No, I can't make it through on this piano.
They were usually just straight sheet music transcriptions, as it were, and the interpretation was left entirely up to the player pianist, and when one has no sense of interpretation, the results are kind of horrible.
How hard is it to do it?
Already no trouble at all. Oh.
No more than 3 heart attacks and a couple of coronaries should get you through one roll.
I should say this is not par for the course for a player piano. One in good condition requires really very little effort. Over the years when we've had many of them in the house, children used to come in off the sidewalk 4 and 5 years old and play them quite successfully after a couple of minutes of instruction. So it's really not that much effort when they're in good condition, which I must say this one is not.
I think it'd be fun, maybe it's an imposition, but it'd be fun to hear one that you can do something with by virtue of the way you pump it. Man and the machine collaborate to give us a
super performance. Of course, this is true with all of them. At the very least, you can vary the volume to a greater or less degree.
Well, we can play with this by having whichever one of you gentlemen want to pump it, just pump it, you know, without any expression for part of the roll, and then play it the way they do play with expression. I mean, these are, in a way, expression pianos from the standpoint that you put in the expression.
If you became very good at these, you could really produce some awfully fine fine results. And when they were new, people became very adept at really satisfying musical results. Mm-hmm. And with their, and it was a very expressive type thing, as opposed to the Ampico downstairs, where everything was removed from you. You just put the roll on and had to...
Well, could you pick something out and do that?
Oh, well, I can't say much for my interpretive abilities, unfortunately. I am not one of the really talented piano roll interpreters, but at least I can knock it around a little bit. In its fullest extent, it includes changing the tempo and all this sort of thing to alter the phrasing, as well as the volume controlling, using the manual levers on the machine. One would be controlling the sustaining pedal with one finger, the volume in the treble with another button under one finger, the bass volume with another finger, and the overall volume with your feet, as well as modifying the tempo of the music with your right hand, if you could keep it all in your mind. It's a little difficult to do.
Oh, but there were instruction rules that say how to do that.
Yes. It takes a little more than instruction.
Was this basically a public performance kind of adventure, or would you do this in your own home?
No, it was almost entirely for home use. In the course of promotion of this sort of machine, there were public performances done with the well-known artists. It was a very common ploy amongst the various manufacturers to take an artist of the day and a concert grand equipped with one of these machines and take it around to various large cities, and in conjunction with an orchestra or by itself, it would do a live versus recorded performance, which gave many people the sweats, you know, whether everything was going to work right. They quite often made special rolls with blank intervals on them to allow for either the live pianist or the orchestra to function, and then at the appointed time it would start the player piano again. And it was really rather difficult to tell which was which. They quite often put a curtain in front so that you couldn't tell who was at the keyboard. Or they would quite often have the pianist start playing, drop the curtain, and then everything would continue, everything would be normal, and then suddenly he would pop around the curtain and wave to everybody, and you know, very effective.
Have you done some live performances with these instruments? Have you taken them out in public to try things like this?
Only one time, about a year ago. We did get together a show at the Zellerbach Hall on the campus. We not only had pianos, but a number of other mechanical musical instruments, including a non-Stradivarius violin with piano accompaniment.
What do you mean, a non-Stradivarius?
Well,
it's a basically a real violin that has little round wheels that bow the violin rather than a bow, and a 48-note piano behind it. And there are several of them around. They're very collectible, and in good condition, they claim they're capable of marvelous effects.
Especially the one with the two violins.
Yes, which neither one will stay in tune with the other or the piano, but they claim it gives you a very charming celeste effect. And we had other instruments. We had small music boxes and large music boxes, and Dick's large pit photo player, which was used for silent movies.
All 10 feet long
all
of it.
10 feet long. And
percussion, pipe percussion. Organ, the whole thing.
Oh, you mean like a carousel?
Similar, yes.
Similar, but more designed for silent music, silent movie work.
Yeah, it could be done either way with an operator at the keyboard who could bring in whatever sound effects were needed in the film. He could play the keyboard by hand or from rolls, and then cue in three ranks of organ pipes and a variety of percussive effects that were available on the machine. I have another one now that's even larger than that with a bigger variety of sound effects. And when I had these particular machines restored, I had them fixed also so they would play like a Nickelodeon, so that they will play all these instruments automatically as well. So you can get all sorts of effects on them. And they are the equivalent of almost a theater orchestra.
Well, I demand that you pick something off the shelf and show what you can do with a good pair of legs and a piano.
Go ahead, Dale.